and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives out there getting a hate buzz. How are you? Mark Riley is back.
Hi!
Good morning. There you go. There's the Mark Riley. Hi. What's going on? What did you do down there in Disney World?
Watched.
Yeah, I knew that.
A lot of stuff.
I knew that. I was sitting here saying, you know what Riley's doing? He's standing next to waves. He's standing next to rides waving. That's all he's doing, just waving. That's it, Vivica.
No. My daughter doesn't like rides anymore, those kind of rides anymore. Neither. We went on the safari. We went on the train rides and stuff. We saw a lot of animals. That's what she likes.
Did you see the horrendous thing that happened down there? Gary Sinise tells you to go on Mission Space.
Yeah.
And now some
four-year-old child died. This was on Monday afternoon.
Awful.
We were actually in the Animal Kingdom. When this happened. It happened at Epcot. Ironically enough, Mark, it happened right around the time this young man went on this ride around the time that they announced that there was going to be a verdict in the Michael Jackson case.
Uh-huh.
So what ended up happening was he died at 5 o'clock Friday afternoon, about maybe 15, 20 minutes before they announced the Jackson verdict. That story was completely submerged by Michael Jackson coverage until today.
Well, it doesn't look like there was any foul play or the ride was even malfunctioning. I think it was one of those cases where the kid, maybe he's got some health ailment, maybe he shouldn't have been so young. I mean, he seems a little young to go on there, but they go by height, right?
They go by height. They do not go by age. Apparently, they're saying that he met the height requirement. The mother knew right away that there was something wrong because the young man had gotten rigid. And she
got
reached out,
and,
yeah,
yeah, grabbed
she
him.
Reached out, grabbed his hand while the ride was going on.
Horrendous.
You know, this is not for nothing. But if you have any doubts about that sort of thing, don't mess with the ride. Please don't mess with the ride.
It's a scary ride. It's one of those that's like it simulates the test they put astronauts through, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it is the ride, apparently, that has had more people go to the hospital than any other ride in any of the Disney theme parks.
As I said, it was used to test astronauts.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not physically, but, you know, obviously you can't blame the victim here. You know, the kid... it's a very sad thing, and who the hell knows what happened?
No.
I guess they'll find out what happened. I assume it was something they didn't know about, a health issue they didn't know
yeah.
about.
Yeah, well, the initial autopsies can't really find out exactly what happened. But I'll tell you, Mark, Disney World is a very strange place beyond that. You know, I mean, for me, well, because, you know, I'm looking, after we had that guest on that told us about, you know, the whole thing with the cast member, first of all.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you were doing. You were looking around, there's got to be someone smoking weed right there.
Yeah, where's that underground cast member I heard so much about? No, it wasn't that.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, first of all, they call everybody cast members.
Right? Yeah,
they don't call
yeah.
them workers.
Yeah,
they call
yeah.
them cast members.
Sure.
And, you know, it looks like they're all into it. We went to the Cinderella celebration. All that was
sure.
wonderful. But when you see a 60-year-old man sweeping up in front of a 4-year-old kid, is something about that just tugs at somebody like me. You
Republican policy in action.
Yeah.
See that? That guy's got to work. He can't retire. He's, you know, it's probably his second job, maybe.
It may well be his second job, because one thing that you kind of get a sense of is that with all of these employees, I mean, this is a place that is bigger than the island of Manhattan, Mark. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. It's the only reason to go down to Orlando, I think.
Yeah.
But you were funny. You said the most frightening thing was Orlando itself. Just yeah.
Well, Orlando is like a world of strip malls and like highways, and that's all cool. I mean, if that's what you're into. But for me, and I heard something very interesting. We were driving into the Disney complex to go to our hotel.
Yeah.
Somebody asked this guy that was driving us how much gas cost.
Yeah.
And he said, well, over in this part of town, they rip you off. You know, if you're near the tourists, if you're near the resort, gas costs one thing. If you go into Orlando proper, where the people live, gas costs something completely
different.
The same
here. That's the same here.
I mean,
I was out in Queens, you know, and I was with I was in a cab, and the guy looked at the gas prices right there in Queens by the entrance to the Queensboro Bridge.
Yeah.
This is crazy. In Brooklyn, it's like 10 cents less than this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So while you were gone, apparently it looks like the Yankees want their own stadium. There's some sort of weird stadium one-upsmanship going on here. They unveiled a plan to spend $800 million on a new Yankee ballpark just north of the current one.
Yeah, and they want, I think, $300 million of New York City taxpayers' money in order to build that stadium. This is something that they've talked about for a long time. At one time, George Steinbrenner wanted to move the Yankees out of the Bronx completely.
Right, but it's not one of those things that they said the Mets were getting a stadium, so they're, you know, if the Mets are going to get a new one, we want a new one.
Well, what they did was just re-unveil a plan that they've had for a long time. There are people in that Bronx neighborhood that oppose this stadium because it's going to eliminate a park that's due north of the stadium.
I think Dan Pashman's got plans to build a stadium for the Air America Jim Earl softball team.
I think he's working
on it right now.
Can I get a piece of
sure.
Where's Johnny K Street?
He'll be in. He'll be in tomorrow. Also, while you were gone, or apparently yesterday, the New Jersey court ruled that against same-sex marriages. I guess what they have is they have provisions that allow some civil, they have, you can be, you get, like, if you are in a gay relationship, you do get some respect in terms of, medical benefits and in terms of visitation rights and some tax breaks. But apparently they said they will not amend the Constitution in order to accommodate gay marriages, per se. And this was because seven gay couples sued, I guess, to
yes.
get the freedom to get married. And this is one of those shameful things, I think, on some level. Even though they get the civil union thing, I think that what could hurt? What could hurt to allow people to marry the person they want? And that's that. You know, just let it be so they have all the trappings of legitimacy in terms of the way culture works.
Well, it would seem logical. Mark, I think what they're doing in this case, this was state appeals court, it was a 2-1 decision. I think they were splitting legal hairs here and throwing the ball back into the state legislature's court. In other words, there's nothing in the New Jersey Constitution, the court ruled, that requires the recognition of gay marriage. They're saying if you want gay marriage recognized, then you have to get it passed through the Assembly and through the State Senate. I don't know whether it'll happen there. Let's hope it would. It seems to make sense. New Jersey is the most diverse state in the country. Why not have? Why not be the one that breaks
it? It's sort of an interesting thing, though, is that this appellate judge said that if marriage is defined as strictly a heterosexual union, couples are denied the right to marry the person of their choice and so have no real right to marry. And in that language, he makes it pretty clearly a civil rights issue.
Yeah, and this was the one dissenter. This is Donald G. Collister. He was the one that said in the 2-1 decision that the other two were wrong in saying that the Constitution denies or does not actually give people the right to recognize, or the state the right to recognize same-sex couples.
And I want to get into this. So Congressman John Conyers, as you know, is holding hearings around the Downing Street memo, the information that basically proves to a lot of people that Tony Blair's government was at the behest of George Bush's administration, the neocon death cult, was urged and sort of cajoled into wrapping intelligence around catering intelligence to policy that would enable them to fight invade Iraq. And Congressman John Conyers will be holding hearings tomorrow at 1 p.m. on the Downing Street memo. The hearings will be at the Democratic Party headquarters because Republicans will not give Conyers a room on Capitol Hill anymore. They won't give him one. Which is heinous. This is a problem that Sensenbrenner has. There's a schism between Sensenbrenner and Conyers. There's a schism between Republicans and Democrats on this committee. And Sensenbrenner has pushed them off off of the Capitol grounds and into the Democratic National Committee meeting room. And also at 5 o'clock tomorrow, there will be a large rally in Lafayette Square Park in front of the White House to support Congressman Conyers, who plans to deliver to President Bush a letter signed by over 500,000 Americans and at least 94 Congress members that asks the president to respond to questions raised by the Downing Street minutes. You can also contact C-SPAN because there's some talk that they might not cover these forums. They have been previous, but they might not. And you can call C-SPAN at 202-737-3220 or email events@cspan.org to just tell them, look, keep covering this because this is important. This could turn out to be one of the most important documents in terms of having some proof about intelligence being misused to justify a war for no reason. And I think it's important because this information needs to get out there because this is the type of information that once a seed is planted in a person's head, they start to doubt. And we can see that there's a wave of this doubt happening in Republicans, happening in working people around this war and around this administration. And, we're going to come back. Coming up next, we're going to talk about systemic racism any number of places, in the Senate, certainly. So stay tuned for that. 15 past the hour, Air America Radio Mornings Edition.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition. The how's that gonna look in the deposition? I got all messed up by a crooked family physician. Now to clear my name.
Next message.
Morning Sedition. Fighting treason. With reason. This is Air America Radio.
Per month. For free quotes, call 800-670-LIFE. That's 800-670-LIFE. Or visit lifequotes.com to view the lowest rates.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm sitting with my friend Mark Riley.
Hiya.
Back from vacation after a few days.
Yeah.
Hey, folks, we'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn next Friday. That's June 24th, not this Friday, but next Friday. We have a lot of giveaways, great guests. You know the drill. Come on down.
Yeah.
I will be performing at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday, June 25th. Go to bananascomedyclub.com for ticket info. Also, here at Air America, here at Morning Sedition, we're raising money to help send kids from the Bronx to summer camp. Go to Camp Air America link, the Camp Air America link, at morningsedition.com to find out how you can help. We'll have more on that later in the show. I've been talking a bit about Howard Dean, Howard Dean being Howard Dean, God bless him for being Howard Dean. And I got a piece of a quote from Howard Dean. He was at the Rainbow Push Coalition conference in Chicago on Sunday. And this is a quote that we're going to use to, move through some stories here. The chairman, this is a quote from Howard Dean, quote, "The chairman of the Republican Party, as you know, has made a big deal about attracting African-American voters. And this is a litmus test. If you aren't going to support the extension of the voting Rights Act, I don't know what right you have to go to a black church and show your face. I think it's hypocritical for Republicans to pretend to reach out to the African-American community unless they say they are going to reauthorize what gave the African-American community political power. The Voting Rights Act was passed in 1965 and expires in 2007. Now, this is a day after they began jury selection in the 1964 civil rights case of the killing of Schwerner, Goodman, and Cheney in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Mississippi Senator Thad Cochran, one of many senators, Republican senators, did not co-sponsor a resolution apologizing for past failures to pass anti-lynching laws. So on some level, he, among other Republican senators, refused to oppose lynching in 2005.
Well, the person that gave them cover to do this was none other than Bill Frist,
right,
the majority leader. By refusing to allow an individual vote on this, in other words, by pushing for a voice vote only, so that as long as nobody said nay to it, it passed.
And apparently that a voice vote can be done with one person in the room.
Yeah.
That all you need is one senator to go nay. And as long as there's no dissenting votes, no matter how many people are in the room, if there's no dissenting, it's unanimous. And if it were done the other way procedurally, it would have required all 100 senators to speak up, say their names, and where they stood on this thing.
Yeah. Now, the chief sponsors were Mary Landrieu from Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And George Allen, Republican from Virginia. This is something that we had talked about before, Mark, and I saw some stuff when I was in Florida of one old gentleman, and I can't call his name right now, but he's like 90-something years old, who was the victim of a lynching back in the 1930s. And he was one of the people, they wheeled him out in a wheelchair and actually kind of directed the apology at him. But I found it truly ironic, and maybe I'm the only one that feels this way, that apology for lynching happened on the same day that Michael Jackson got off. But that'll be another discussion for another day. This situation is interesting, too, because of the way it ties directly into the issues of the Voting Rights and Civil Rights Acts of 64 and 65, respectively. There has been a long fear in the black community that Howard Dean was speaking to, that the Voting Rights Act would be allowed to lapse and that black people would, in fact, be disenfranchised as a result. A lot of people looked at 2000 in Florida and said, you see, this is what can happen if you don't have an active Voting Rights Act and an active enforcement of the Voting Rights
Act. Well, I tell you, if these senators aren't willing to co-sponsor an apology to for not passing anti-lynching law up to this, in the past.
Yeah, and what the excuse was, don't you?
There's many excuses, apparently.
States' rights. That was the big thing that they used to always, because there were anti-lynching laws that came up three or four times in the 20th century, and each time there was some issue regarding states' rights.
But there is no excuse for these guys in 2004 to not get on board with this and be part of this apology, because that implies to me there's only one conclusion to make, is that they are still pandering or standing up for a constituency that are you know, fundamentally and heinously racist, that they're not willing to apologize for this. This is a, you know, these people are Lamar Alexander. This is this morning. They can apparently still add their names and still be a co-sponsor, you know, at any time, apparently. But Lamar Alexander from Tennessee, Robert Bennett from Utah, Thad Cochran, as I mentioned, from Mississippi, Kent Conrad from North Dakota, John Cornyn of Texas, Michael Crapo from Idaho, Michael Enzi from Wyoming, Chuck Grassley from Iowa, Judd Craig from New Hampshire, Orrin Hatch, Utah, Trent Lott, Mississippi, Lisa Murkowski, Arkansas, Richard Shelby, Alabama, John Sununu in New Hampshire, Craig Thomas from Wyoming, and George Voinovich from Ohio.
I'm surprised to see his name there.
Well, shame on you guys. You know, and apparently their offices are giving excuses. I mean, these guys should all be co-sponsoring, an apology for not passing lynching laws, sooner than they were passed. And I think the great quote on this is Jay Cohen, the wife of former Defense Secretary William Cohen. Jan Cohen, and one of the key figures in the committee for a formal apology, said, quote, "America is home of the brave, but I'm afraid there might be a few cowards who have to cower to their very narrow-minded and backward, hateful constituency. They're hiding out, and it's reminiscent of a pattern of under a hood in the night, riding past, scaring people."
Yeah.
And it's interesting and ironic that the Supreme Court overturned the capital murder conviction and death sentence of Thomas Miller L., a black Texan, on the grounds that Dallas prosecutors engaged in racial discrimination by removing 10 of the 11 potential black jurors, which was part of a systemic racism within the Fifth Circuit in Texas. Apparently.
Well, yeah, and see, what the Supreme Court is doing, Mark, and people should not lose sight of this. We, over a year ago, started saying to people, look, there is a problem with the criminal justice system in the state of Texas. And you know what? The Supreme Court is now saying we were right. There's a problem, and it needs to get fixed.
Yeah, and well, you know what? Mel Martinez on this energy bill and some other Republicans are starting to find the cojones to actually stand up to the neocon death cult's policies. It's pretty interesting stuff, and we're going to talk about that in the Exxon job for a stooge who was a reviser of science for the administration. It's 27 past the hour, Air America Radio Mornings Edition.
Mornings Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
D. Rumsfeld.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hiya.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Citizen program. Good morning, folks. At the top of the hour, if you want to hang around, we're going to have Senator Russ Feingold from Wisconsin to talk about a resolution he's trying to get some motion on to get a plan to get us out of Iraq in some time frame that the Bush administration could commit to. The neocon death cult might not have a plan there. We're also, I'd like to get into some Cindy Sheehan, who is the president of Gold Star Families for Peace, a mother who lost her son in Iraq, said some beautiful things the other day, some powerful things the other day. I want to get into that in a little while. We're also going to cover in just a few minutes the new resistance to the energy bill because of a hole that has been opened by drilling in Anwar. Republicans and also, you know, of course, the oil companies want to start drilling everywhere on federal lands. But Mel Martinez and Bill Nelson down in Florida with a bipartisan coalition are standing up to the neocon death cult. We're going to get to that in a second. But, you know, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we got the machine, people. The iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's kick it up. You know, Riley, we left the machine over the strand. They had to bring it. We left it over there. They had to bring it over. Yeah. From the New York Times, California reins in clinics using marijuana for medical purposes. California reins in clinics using marijuana for medical purposes. Translation, Hate Street regulars forced to seek alternative treatment for Slurpee headaches.
Slurpee headaches.
From Associated Press, Earth-like planet discovered in orbit around nearby star. Earth-like planet discovered in orbit around a nearby star. Translation, inhabitants seen slaughtering each other over religion and fossil fuels. Yeah. From Fox News, teen charged with battery for vomiting on a teacher. Teen charged with battery for vomiting on a teenager. A teacher. Why do I keep saying that? The original headline is teen charged with battery for vomiting on teacher. The translation from the machine that it just gave me is student claims First Amendment protection under satire. Come on! Satire! Huh? Okay, so this evil bastard, Phil Cooney, who used to be a White House official and one-time oil industry lobbyist, who was editing those scientific research papers to present to the administration, basically taking out the stuff that would, you know, imply, based on science, scientific speculation based on reasoned observation of real stuff, that greenhouse gases are going to kill us. This is the guy, Phil Cooney, who was the guy in charge of excising the truth out of these papers he presented to the administration, who resigned shortly after this became a national news story, the excising of these paragraphs and whatnot from these papers. And now, guess what, Riley? He's got a job at
ExxonMobil. You know what's interesting about
this? 2 days later.
2 days later. What's interesting about this is they didn't even wake up Scott McClellan to talk about what a great job this guy did. They gave that work to Dana Perino, a deputy spokeswoman for the White House, who said, Phil Cooney did a great job, and we appreciate his public service and the work he did, and we wish him well in the private sector. They knew where he was going for quite some time. After the Times got a hold of this stuff, they knew his position was untenable. It didn't matter how many mea culpas they tried to run on people.
Right, and they said, I remember a couple of days ago, they said that it was a planned departure. He didn't resign because of the attention.
Yeah, right, sure.
So in a related story, in an oil-related story, Florida Senators, Democrat Bill Nelson, he is a Democrat, yes.
Yes.
And Republican Mel Martinez and a seemingly bipartisan coalition have threatened to filibuster and delay the federal energy bill until a ban put in place by Clinton on drilling in federal waters off Florida and other states is extended. See, we've talked about this before. Once they went into Anwar, once they got the freedom to do that, the real threat was that if you set a precedent to where they can drill in national parks or federal lands, these guys, once they see a hole, they want to make it a canyon and they want to drill everywhere.
They'll have an oil rig off of South Beach in Miami at the rate they're going, I'm telling you now. Now, Jeb Bush in 2001 actually prevailed on his older brother to block drilling in federal waters. Apparently, I don't know whether they really think there's a whole lot of oil off the coast of Florida, but the way they're talking about trying to get at it, you would seem to think it was the mother load of all oil supplies.
Sure.
And see, what they're doing, Mark, is trying to push the idea that America, you know, the gas prices are going up, that we want to reduce dependence on Middle Eastern oil, and what better way to do it? What they try to present the American people with is an idea that if you don't allow drilling off the coast of the United States, then we got to continue buying from the Middle East and we'll be hostages to them. It's a slick strategy, but in this instance, it won't work. When Mel Martinez, who actually has done a couple of interesting things lately, when Mel Martinez stands up and says, you know what, this is not going to stand. We're not going to have oil rigs off the coast of my state. There's a problem here for the Bush administration.
Well, it's interesting because Mel Martinez was, a picked and chosen. I mean, he was the guy the Bush administration put in there because they couldn't find anyone else to run. And he said he didn't want to get into politics. Am I right with that?
Yeah, he was a former housing secretary. They figured that, his resume as a Cuban-American would be something that would be very appealing to Florida voters. They turned out to be right about that. But now Mel Martinez on Guantanamo and a couple of other issues has strayed from the ranch, has moved off the administration line. I don't know how far they're going to let him get away with it. Even Jeb, to some extent,
is
moving away from
this. Don't you think this has broader implications in the sense that, you know, public opinion is starting to drift away from this administration and a lot of these guys, you know, I'd like to think that they've all of a sudden, you know, got consciences or that they've all of a sudden, you know, taken a turn ideologically. But I think some of this stuff, certainly with a state issue like drilling off the coast of Florida, this guy's thinking ahead to re-election.
Yeah, he's thinking ahead to re-election, and he's also thinking to himself, wait a minute, Florida, what is Florida's number one industry? Tourism. Tourism will get hurt if, you know, tourists have to sit there and listen to oil rigs digging into the ground right off the coast.
Just to see them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're eyesores, they're huge. And as you said, if there's not that much oil there, I mean, that was part of the issue about Alaska, is that
yep.
the Alaska legislator, at least the senator up there, his name eludes me at this moment.
Stevens.
Stevens.
Yes.
He wanted up there because, you know, he says we're going to create jobs, you know, and if there's no oil, who cares? Then we'll have cleanup jobs, you know. But the truth of the matter was that oil industry people said that, look, there's not that much up there. It's not that great of an investment. We don't think that we're going to get a lot. But maybe their thinking is now, if we can drill enough holes with a short yield, that, you know, it'll make up for hitting the one gusher. So they just want to just plow holes in there wherever they can.
Well, you know, Bill Nelson, senator from Florida, says he is convinced that the Interior Department wants to allow up to 4.5 million acres of drilling off the coast. In other words, drilling on 4.5 million acres about 3 miles off the coast of Florida. This is the Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
The people in Florida, on a bipartisan level, say they're not feeling it. Nelson says he'll filibuster, and I say this is a good use of the filibuster.
Sure, absolutely. It,
you know, I mean, this is something where people cannot just run roughshod over the wishes of people, you know, in a state like Florida. First of all, it's going to hurt Jeb Bush if next thing you know, Gail Norton, who's the Interior Secretary, mm-hmm. pushes this through, although the department says they're not really behind it. If she does manage to push it through, it's going to hurt Jeb Bush politically. It's going to hurt Mel Martinez politically. And that's why they're, you know, standing behind this ban.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting to me that this was a ban, you know, put into place by the Clinton administration, you know, out of respect for federal lands, for national parks. You can't, you know, it just, the Republican agenda to sort of, you know, pillage and drain everything out of this country, anything beautiful, just to use it, you know, and make it garbage out of greed is baffling and horrifying to me every day.
They create their own reality with this stuff, Mark. They're going to come and say, well, you know, this will be perfectly safe. It won't harm anything. There'll be no loss in tourism. What did they say about Anwar?
Mm-hmm.
There's no animals going to get hurt up there. Don't worry about it. It's going to be this big jobs producer. They put a happy face on everything, from oil drilling
yep.
to the war in Iraq,
yep.
and it is all equally bogus.
Well, you know, we've been talking the last couple of days about, you know, disillusion. You know, there's the people of this country are disillusioned and tired of the war in Iraq for a lot of reasons.
Valid reasons.
One, that we were there on false pretenses. Of course, the body count of Americans is getting a little out of hand. There doesn't seem to be any exit strategy. But the population, people who once supported this war before they you know, realized that they were being lied to, are waking up. Public support is dwindling. Ranking military people on the ground in Iraq are starting to say that this war is unwinnable by military actions, and it can only be won in the political world. And they're saying that even to, you know, begin to train the Iraqi security forces is going to take at least 2 years. Well, people like Russell Feingold is demanding, or at least putting a resolution together, calling on the Bush administration to set a timetable for troops withdrawal in Iraq. And I think it's an important issue, and he's become a regular on our show, a friend of the show. We're looking forward to talking to him in a little while. And we also, I want to explore, or at least share with you, some statements made by a woman who lost her son in Iraq and her criticism of the Bush administration. That's all coming up next. So stay with us. It's Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio, 44 past the hour.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
That's 444-1984. 1-800-444-1984.
Forty-eight past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're raising money to help send kids from the Bronx to summer camp. Go to Camp Air America. Go to the Camp Air America link at MorningSedition.com to find out how you can help. A lot of people have already been donating. It's great. It's great. You know, we'll get into a little more of this later on. We got a guest to talk about the South Bronx and why people need to go to camp. I'll tell you, these kids need to go to camp. So we'll have more on that a little later in the show. Some of the stuff we've been covering today, helicopter crash here in New York. Everyone lived, but one person apparently in a medically induced coma. That is, I don't know what that means. You know,
apparently it's to deal with pressure on the brain, that they do it deliberately so that they can ease the pressure on the brain surgically.
Wow. I'll tell you, those sightseeing helicopters, I did one in Hawaii, and they crashed there too. It's scary, but it's great to be on a helicopter. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Michael Jackson says he's ending sleepovers with children. Jackson said he plans to spend the next few days resting, getting his strength back, and deleting all his kiddie porn files. Michael Jackson's lawyer said Tuesday he's convinced that the pop star would no longer let children sleep in his room, quote unquote. Ah, semantics. God's gift to pedophiles. A new poll shows more people consider Bill O'Reilly a journalist than Bob Woodward. Oh, wow. Although only 30% of the public said Woodward was a journalist, that number jumped to 60% when the question was rephrased to Bob Woodward as played by Robert Redford. Of course, Woodward became famous back when the word journalist was often associated with reporting and facts. New Jersey court rules against same-sex couples. The New Jersey Constitution does not guarantee a right to the pursuit of happiness on the assumption that would only encourage people to leave New Jersey.
Oh.
I'm kidding. Yeah, I know you live there, right?
That's right.
Appellate Court Judge Donald Collister defined marriage as not only a heterosexual union, but one of the only unions in New Jersey not controlled by the mafia. Those are your morning sedition.
And he was a dissenter. Whoa.
Okay, so... Yankees, they want to compete with the Mets now and build a new stadium. They've announced plans to put $800 million into a new stadium just north of the old Yankee Stadium that you say is going to take over, that's going to erase a park.
It's going to erase a park, but under the law, they have to create more parkland. So part of the money that the city and state is going to put up, $300 million in all, will be going to building new parkland. And by the way, the stadium that they're going to construct will be smaller than the existing Yankee Stadium, but with more luxury boxes.
I want to say to people who are listening, Congressman John Conyers will be holding hearings tomorrow at 1 p.m. on the Downing Street memo. The hearings will be at the Democratic Party headquarters because James Sensenbrenner, the baby, has pushed Conyers into a situation where he can't have a room in the Capitol. All right, and C-SPAN's been covering these forums, and we want them to continue to cover them. So if you could you call C-SPAN at 202-737-3220 or email C-SPAN at events@c-span.org and tell them to please continue covering the Conyers hearings. This is important stuff. It's important that we at least try to get this administration to answer for the Downing Street memo in what is, proof that the U.S. administration, the neocon death cult, basically bullied Britain into taking intelligence and catering it to policy that would enable them to join in the Iraqi invasion that was based on falsehoods.
So many people are trying to blow this away like, oh, no, this is impossible. When Blair and Bush were together the other week, they both said, well, no, there's no validity to this report. Well, gee, then why is everybody so scared of John Conyers? Next, they're going to have him out at the Washington Monument holding these hearings.
Well, yeah, I think it's important to get this out into the population, into the culture, into the global or at least national unconscious and conscious, because this is the kind of thing that is fueling the disenfranchisement of a lot of people that supported the neocon death cult originally. A lot of people are getting fed up with the war because they're starting to realize that it was based on lies. And just to add to that fire to people that once supported this administration's policy blindly out of fear because they were paralyzed with fear and just followed whoever was leading, it's important that this information gets out because this is the kind of stuff that changes minds.
Yeah, true. And Conyers, Congressman Conyers has a long history of doing this. 20 years ago, he was one of the first people in Washington to do hearings on police brutality all over the country. Fearless guy.
Yeah, well, I think it's the most important thing is that from our show's point of view, this is just part of an evolution that proves proves that you know that this was all based on lies, and this was you know, it should be, you know, thank God for John Conyers. The Freedom and Faith Bus Tour is a tour of people in the there's some religious people, some not religious people, but it's a tour during which the president of Gold Star Families for Peace, Cindy Sheehan of Vacaville, California, made a statement about in reaction to George Bush. It's a very beautiful thing because she made a speech in Lexington, Kentucky. This was an event organized by the clergy and Laity Network, and co-sponsored by dozens of liberal religious organizations. But she was responding to George Bush saying that it's hard work, to quote the president, hard work, quote unquote, comforting the widow of a soldier who's been killed in Iraq. And this is what Cindy Sheehan said, if I can quote it. Her son was killed in Iraq. Quote, hard work is seeing your son's murder on CNN one Sunday evening while you're enjoying the last supper you'll ever truly enjoy again. Hard work is having three military officers come to your house a few hours later to confirm the aforementioned murder of your son, your firstborn, your kind and gentle, sweet baby. Hard work is burying your child 46 days before his 25th birthday. Hard work is holding your other three children as they lower the body of their big brother into the ground. Hard work is not jumping in the grave with him and having the earth cover you both. She said that, and you know, when I read this, you know, I choked up.
Yeah.
And since her son's death, she has made opposition to the Bush administration a full-time job. To quote Cindy Sheehan again, quote, we're watching you very carefully, and we're going to do everything in our power to have you impeached for misleading the American people, beating a political stake in your black beating a political stake in your black heart will be the fulfillment of my life. That's from Cindy Sheehan, who lost his son in Iraq, speaking in Lexington, Kentucky.
A red state.
Yes, on the Freedom and Faith Bus Tour. It was an event that was organized by the Clergy and Laity Network and co-sponsored by dozens of liberal religious organizations touring the country. Apparently, it's been to Chicago, New York, and Indianapolis. The next stops include Columbus, Pittsburgh, Cleveland. Some powerful, powerful words there.
Well, you know, Mark, what we seem to see happening now, little by little, with the Bush administration, this latest poll, I think, bears this out, we're starting to see their happy talk backfiring on them. Not just backfiring on them with Democrats or people that were originally opposed to the war, but now people who supported Bush going into Iraq are starting to say, what kind of soap is he selling us here?
Exactly. And now Democrats and Republicans alike are starting to say, hey, what's the plan?
Yeah.
You know, military, high-ranking military officials are saying, look, we can't win this on a military level. A lot of people are saying, you know, obviously it was a mistake. But now Russ Feingold is going to, you know, talk to us in just a few minutes about the resolution he's calling on the Bush administration to set a timetable for troop withdrawal from Iraq, you know, specifically.
Yeah.
You know, let's have a plan. Is that too much to ask from the neocon death cult, from the supposed president in the United States?
Apparently.
Russ Feingold will be here to talk to us in a few minutes. So stay with us, because that's coming up next. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. It's 57 past the hour on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Mark Riley is here.
Hey, Maron.
How are you, buddy?
All right.
Look, you know, we've been talking a lot about what's going on in terms of the Senate. A day after they began jury selection in the 1964 civil rights case of the killing of Schwerner, Goodman, and Cheney in Philadelphia, Mississippi, Mississippi Senator, along with many other Republican senators, did not co-sponsor a resolution apologizing for past failures to pass anti-lynching laws. On some level, refusing to oppose lynching.
That's right. And Bill Frist let him get away with it.
And also, there's a lot of talk in the Republican circles now, and a lot of people in general are saying that the Iraq war was the wrong thing to do. And they're starting to believe that, look, you know, the information that we got as a people was lies, and the Republican legislators are now starting to stand up to the neocon death cult. And we're going to talk to Senator Russ Feingold in a matter of minutes here. I just wanted to, before we talk to Russ Feingold, I just want to say what Scott McClellan said the other day, quote, the president talked about how timetables send the wrong message. It would send the wrong message to the terrorists, and it would send the wrong message to the Iraqi people. They have shown they're committed to democracy and freedom, and we're going to stand with them to complete the mission. So there's no timetable on the table, so to speak. And, you know, and President Bush has repeatedly said that U.S. troops would leave Iraq once Iraqi forces were trained, but a lot of military personnel say that could take up to 2 years, and even then, they're not sure whether it would be effective because politically, as long as Americans are there, there's going to be a resistance to change and to stopping this civil war.
Not only that, where are the troops going to come from? I mean, you know, military recruiting is not exactly going smartly for the administration.
Joe Biden talked about a draft. Military schools at all the military academies in this country, enrollment is down. Senator Russ Feingold introduced a resolution onto the Senate floor yesterday calling on the Bush administration to provide a timetable for the war in Iraq. He joins an increasing number of politicians from all sides who want to know when the troops will be able to start to come home. Senator Feingold joins us on the phone this morning. Good morning, Senator Feingold.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming back. Do you think this administration even knows what its goals are in Iraq?
I'm not at all sure. I've become now the first senator to actually introduce a resolution for a timetable to figure out this mission and to withdraw our troops in an appropriate manner. But as you indicated in the introduction, the amazing thing was you had one of the most conservative members of the House, Walter Jones from North Carolina. He's the guy that came up with the idea of calling them freedom fries rather than
right.
French
yes,
fries.
Yes, the other
this
day.
This is not a liberal. Who has just had it. I spoke to him yesterday. He is one of the biggest supporters of President Bush, but he has been meeting with the family. He has personally written something like 1,300 notes to the families who have lost their loved ones in the war, and he has just decided, look, there needs to be a vision. There needs to be a timetable. So his approach might be different than mine, but that is a very significant development, showing that there is a great unhappiness with the way this war is being conducted. And I happen to have voted against it. Congressman Jones voted for it. But what I think we can come together on now is, look, the president needs to come up with some kind of a vision for our people, for the Iraqi people, and for our troops, saying this is the plan and this is the time frame.
Well, you know, it seems like a lot of Republicans are starting to, bubble up in similar sentiments. You know, you have Lindsey Graham and Kurt Weldon and Chuck Hagel are all starting to, question, whether or not some of this stuff is possible. We've got reports from high-ranking military personnel that say it's unwinnable on a military level until the political situation there is put into place in a way that's effective.
Well, that's sort of the way I felt when I was there, and, I kept checking with other people who had been there. I was there with Lindsey Graham and others, and I was with four senators, all of whom had been there before, all of whom had voted for the Iraq War, unlike me, and they all seemed to think in February that things had gotten worse. Well, it's pretty clear that things are even more intense now. You're dealing with an insurgency that I think will continue to be effective unless we change our approach and make it very clear where we're heading and where the Iraqi government is heading. So, when people talk about the troops, I just have to say this. This is not an exaggeration when you say what they're doing is amazing. And really, they are unbelievable, especially young people. But they were given an undefined, unprepared situation that makes their task extremely difficult. And the administration likes to do the happy talk. They like to minimize the difficult issues that are there. The situation, I think, is actually far more difficult than the administration likes to tell us.
Mm-hmm. Now, Senator Feingold, speaking of happy talk, Donald Rumsfeld, our defense secretary, was asked by the BBC whether the situation in Iraq, the security situation, has improved since the day after the war ended. And he responded saying, quote, well, statistically, no, but clearly it has been getting better as we've gone along. A lot of bad things that could have happened have not happened, end quote. Is that the kind of happy talk you're talking about?
Exactly. Anybody who was over there with me and the other senators, we were in the green zone, wearing flak jackets and helmets in the green zone just to go to meetings. This is in the protected zone. And I remember asking one of the generals there, I said, how are things going after the election? He goes, well, you know, things are stable. We only have 50 to 60 attacks a day.
Wow.
And you know, this was good news. And, of course, it's gotten much worse since then. So this is the happy talk. This is the sort of news management that the administration is engaging in. And it's not only a disservice to the American people and, of course, to the Iraqi people. To me, it's an incredible disservice to the troops.
Sure, sure.
Who are there and who are facing this. Everybody needs to be told the truth about exactly how difficult this is. And we need a clear definition of a mission. And, yes, we need a flexible timetable for the withdrawal of our troops.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me is that, you know, if you have military personnel saying, look, you know, this is unwinnable on a military basis until the political situation is taken care of. And then you have people like Cheney and like Bush saying, you know, we're not leaving until we train the Iraqi security force so they can effectively do their job, which you'll never be able to effectively do as long, you know, as the Americans are there causing, you know, resistance with the insurgents and causing the political unrest that's going to be there. It almost seems like this vicious circle. It's certainly a quagmire. You know, what is it going to take? Do you think this resolution is going to have any effect, Senator Feingold?
Well, I think what we're trying to do is ratchet up the pressure on the administration. The first thing is a resolution like mine, which says, look, we try to pass it, and the administration has 30 days to come back with a plan. If that doesn't work, I think we come back and require such a statement.
Yeah.
Of course, if that doesn't work, the ultimate power that we have is the power of the purse, the power to say, look, there won't be money for this. Now, I have voted for the $87 billion. I have voted for the money for the troops, and I hope to continue to, because I hope what the administration does is the responsible thing that many Republicans are calling for, which is to come up with something that we can all look at, that we can look at, the Iraqi people can look at, and say that this so-called American occupation will end. Look, we used a timetable for the transfer of sovereignty. That worked. We used a timetable for the elections. That worked. Why wouldn't a rational timetable that's flexible based on things like whether enough troops are trained and police are trained, why wouldn't that kind of a vision help us rather than hurt us? I think this is a party line that the administration and the military have, that you can't have any vision or any understanding of where we're heading. I think it's completely wrong.
Our guest is Wisconsin Senator Russell Feingold. Senator, Congressman John Conyers is going to be holding a hearing tomorrow about that Downing Street memo. And apparently the Republicans, led by Congressman Sensenbrenner, aren't going to let him have a room on the Capitol. He's doing it at the DNC. What does that tell you?
Well, first of all, good for John Conyers.
Mm-hmm.
I have been hearing people all over Wisconsin and all over the country saying, what about this Downing Street memo? What about this continued evidence that there clearly was a decision made that they're going to war in Iraq no matter what? They kept shifting justifications. I gave a speech in October of 2002 talking about the shifting justifications for this thing. And now we see that even the British government was aware that basically the decision had been made and that the whole process of trying to convince the Congress about WMD and these other things was nothing but a sham.
Yeah.
And so we need to lay it on the line. There's, apart from this issue of a timetable and how we can come together on getting us out of Iraq in a good manner, we need accountability for
yeah.
the outrageous lack of candor that this administration engaged in getting us into this situation.
Absolutely. Before we let you go, Senator Feingold, you've been a strong supporter of campaign finance reform, and recently we've learned that the Republicans with the Pence win bill are trying to undo much of the progress that has been made over the last 30 years, and we know that you've made a lot of that progress with some of your legislation. What will the real consequences for American politics be if they have their way with this thing?
It would effectively repeal the McCain-Feingold bill. Right now, the total amount that a single individual can contribute in a cycle to a committee of political party is $60,000. This would make the figure more than $1 million.
Why do they want to do that?
Well, because they like the idea that they'd be able to raise the money again. A member of Congress would be able to do it, the president. In other words, we'd go back to no controlling legal authority. We'd go back to members of Congress soliciting corrupt contributions.
Mm.
The Feingold bill succeeded in eliminating big contributions solicited by members of Congress. It's 100% effective in that regard. And I guess some of these congressmen are just itching to get on the phone and bilk $1 million contributions out of corporations and unions and individuals.
Without being hampered by law.
Yeah, the law gets, you know, is irritating. Gets in the way.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to try to kill this thing, and I think we can.
Senator Russ Feingold, thank you for being with us again. It's always great to talk to you.
Thanks to both of you.
Okay,
thanks,
you
Senator.
Take care. It's 16 past the hour. Coming up, we're going to get into a pressing question for the country.
There you go.
Yeah, we got future Mark. You know, maybe is going to call, and we've also we're going to talk to Bakari Kitwana about his book, explaining why white kids like rap music. It's
yes.
It's not. It doesn't seem like it's that big of a brain twister, you know. But it's going to be interesting to hear because this happened before, Riley, with jazz, with early R&B.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be curious to hear the updated version. It's 17 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air and online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
That's cabinet refacing from Sears Home Services. 1-800-828-1200. That's 1-800-828-1200.
Twenty-one past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
you're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
Hey, Maron.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry to bother you, but Future Mark is on line one.
Oh, I love Future Mark. Put him through.
Hey, buddy. What's
hey, buddy.
Up?
What's up? So, Future Mark, what's going on in the year 2050?
Well, I've been time traveling again, and.
Okay. Oh, you're using the trip harness. You don't sound too happy, man. What's the matter?
Yeah. Well. Don't be pissed at me, okay?
I can't promise you that until you tell me what's going on. What did we do?
Well, I used my trip harness to go into the past to kind of, you know, try to fix some stuff.
Fix some stuff?
Yeah, you know, fix some stuff.
Uh-huh.
You're not really supposed to go back, okay? But I did.
Oh, man, that doesn't sound like a great idea. Doesn't that screw up the time-space continuum and all that?
Yeah, it does.
Oh.
But that's not all. There's a glitch in the software, so every time I go back, I leave one of us there.
Oh, no.
In our past, and I've been back a lot.
Dude, our past isn't a good place to be, buddy. I mean, how many times have you gone back?
I don't even know, man. The temptation to change the past is so strong. I mean, all right, so far I've found like 40 of us.
40? Oh, dude, you got addicted to it, man, didn't you? Oh, no. Were they doing what I'm thinking they were doing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time. They were drinking.
Oh, Jesus. 40 of us drinking. Where are they now?
Well, some of them are in L.A. One's in Berkeley. There are 12 in New York, and there are a whole bunch of us hiding in some lodge in Idaho.
Oh.
Apparently, one of us opened a bar near Coeur d'Alene. Worst case scenario.
12 in New York? Wait. I saw a guy standing on 6th Street staring at me last week. He had a beard, and he was filthy. But I knew it was me. Damn it.
Yeah, actually, you know, dude, I've been trying to round them all up and send them back to the future. So, yeah, don't freak out. Okay, man, this can be done. It'll be fine.
Oh, man.
And by the way, I have Filthy Bearded Mark right here. He's going back today.
Put him on the phone.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Don't hey, buddy, me. When did you come back?
I think it was like 1989.
Oh, geez, and you've been hiding and drinking this whole time? You came back from the future with the knowledge that we got sober and you blew it?
No. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Hey, buddy. Uh-huh. Buddy, what's up, dude? Hey, I need a favor.
Yeah.
I met these two girls, and I need like $500 like now. Can you do it?
Oh, no, you're another Mark, and you're all coked up right now, aren't you?
Yeah. But listen, they're really hot, man. Come on, just don't be an a-hole. Give me the money, man. Please, give me the money. Give me that. Both of you. God, my children. Sorry, man.
Well, how come you aren't messed up, future Mark? Did you use?
No, man. All right, I took some ecstasy, but that was it.
Oh,
dude, I should have all the marks rounded up in a week or so, and we'll all go to rehab in the future.
All right. Dude, make sure you get all of them, okay?
I'll get them all. Oh, yeah, it reminds me. You know how I always give you some advice?
Yes, please. Give me some advice, Captain Glowstick. What?
Well, there's this one mark out there let's put it this way.
Yeah.
If you get a call from Finland, just hang up, all right? Let Interpol handle it.
Oh.
Remember, okay, buddy, in the future, you can always sex change back.
All right, look, I'm hanging up now. I'm very disappointed in all of us. Oh, man. I can't. You know, it just pisses me off that you know, it's gotten that out of control.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Brendan here.
Yeah.
I just wanted you to know right at the door, a guy just came in. He's like, here he is. He's like 2 inches tall. He says he's you.
Hey, buddy. What's up?
Oh, no, not you too, future Mark.
Dude, let's party, man. I got an 8-ball.
Oh, go hide in my desk. I'm going to deal with you later. You're going to a meeting.
Loser.
Oh, no. Now that guy's here too. That's so weird to see me that size. Oh my god!
So look, you know, I threw that guy's name out there, Bakari Katwana. It's a great name, but I didn't tell people who he was. He's the author of Why White Kids Love Hip Hop: Wanksters, Wiggers, Wannabes, and the New Reality of Race in America. He's going to be talking to us about that stuff. And Brendan, you say you know you've got a you know why?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I love rap music.
Yeah.
And I was really interested in having this guest on because. Because, you know, I don't exactly know why I like it, so maybe he's got some answers for me.
Well, I mean, it's I guess there's a lot of reasons.
Wait,
can
we play some rap music here? I know that we don't usually do that on the show, but
of course.
Why
I don't
not?
Know why not.
Here, wait, this is my favorite rap song. This is Biggie Smalls, Give Me the Loot.
Yeah. Lock your windows, close the doors.
Now, why wouldn't you like that?
I know, it's great.
Yeah. But I don't understand exactly, like, you know, if there's a real reason.
Yeah,
like,
are you looking for some sort of clinical reason?
I guess. Bakari can tell me that. I don't know.
There are certain white people genetically predisposed to like rap music.
Right, or is this a kind of societal thing that I wish I was a part of? I don't know.
Let me explain something to the both of you.
Yeah.
There's no clinical thing about Biggie Smalls.
All right. Yeah.
Never has been, never will be.
That guy's voice, I really think, though, that guy's voice is seminal in music.
As my son told me when I asked him about the mystery of Biggie Smalls, he said he brought back the East Coast.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It. Well, I guess we're going to get to the bottom of this with Bakari Katwana after this, author of Why White Kids Love Hip Hop. So we'll get into it, man.
Absolutely.
Coming up next here on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, 27 past the hour.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Mainstream media, to the extent that they have any will to do that, they're afraid to challenge.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Hey, folks, we're raising money to help send kids from the Bronx to summer camp. Go to the Camp Air America link at morningsedition.com to find out how you can help. We're going to have a little more on that later in the show. We're going to have Melissa Fernandez, who's going to talk about air quality and the environment in the South Bronx. She's with the Gloria Wise Pathways for Youth Boys and Girls Club of the Bronx. We'll get into that a little later. Right now, Bakari Katwana is the author of the newly released Why White Kids Love Hip Hop, Wanksters, Wiggers, Wannabes, and the New Reality of Race in America. He's the former executive editor of The Source magazine. He's going to join us here now in the studio to discuss the appeal of hip hop across racial lines. Good morning, Bakari. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Hey, so I guess we should just start out with a general question. Why do white kids love hip hop?
I think it's good music, first and foremost.
There you go.
Enough said.
Yeah. Beyond that, I think that young people, hip-hop has become mainstream pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
And young people, most certainly at the elementary and high school levels, are consuming and listening to hip-hop alongside other musics that are pop music. And they're not really drawing a big distinction between Linkin Park, Jay-Z,
True.
50 Cent, or Britney Spears.
Okay.
But, Bakari, if you look at the history of this country, particularly in the 20th century, we've seen young people, young white kids in the past, go for everything from Louis Armstrong through to the Temptations. We've seen young white kids be attracted to black culture in the most general sense. What makes hip-hop different?
I think what makes hip-hop different is this visual age that we live in, the ways that even corporate America has taken music around the world. That's what makes hip-hop different. I think what makes hip-hop different is people still, we're at a point where people still don't want to deal with race, but race is still a part of our history. And so the question of why white kids love hip-hop becomes a bigger question than just music.
You're saying style?
I think it becomes a bigger question than music. It becomes a question of, you know, some people are afraid. Because you've had this history with blues and jazz, people on the black side are afraid that this is another black music that's going to be stolen.
Appropriated.
Think, right. And people on, mm-hmm. on the white side, mm-hmm. I think there is a, you know, people coming out, the O'Reilly, the people like Bill O'Reilly mm-hmm. and Bill Bennett, who articulate it in very interesting ways. But ultimately what they're saying is, will these stereotypical behaviors that we've associated with young black men who dominate rap music, will those behaviors be taken on by young white kids? And I think
right.
that is what makes this an interesting conversation.
Let's talk about the X factor for a second, Bakari. Why do so many black parents across class lines, middle class black parents, poor, but why do they hate hip hop so much?
I think that it's a generation gap. And it's a generation gap that I think is rooted in the fact that for older generations of black people, to be middle class meant a certain thing. Whether you were economically middle class, it wasn't always based upon economics, but it was a lifestyle. It was a set of values. And I think that people, middle class black parents who are critiquing hip hop, they're critiquing some of the things that young black kids do that historically black people just didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't air dirty laundry. You didn't walk around using the N-word. You didn't walk around using
right.
profanity. It was a bad reflection on your family and your community. And that's something that generationally there's a shift. And I think that's one of the concerns.
Well, that's interesting because, like what you were saying before about William Bennett and O'Reilly, in that they are really sort of using, you know, stereotypes to sort of continue to promote fear and racism around hip hop.
I think so. I think that one of my concerns with the book is to start to try to get beyond that. And I think that when we ask the question why white kids love hip hop, or we start to talk about white kids in hip hop, and we come out the gate with the same conversation, we don't move the conversation forward.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to do in the book is to suggest that there are interesting things that this generation of young people are doing with race that's very progressive, that's moving the country forward in terms of race relations. And if we don't talk about those things when we talk about white kids in hip hop, then we're missing a good moment to really see something different that's happening beneath the radar.
Nice.
Bakari, over time, I've seen, certainly in my lifetime, white kids who were Velcroed to rhythm and blues in the 1960s, but when they got to be a certain age, when they got to be a certain point, when they started to have to pay mortgages, they stripped that whole thing away from them like they were shedding skin.
Right. And where'd they go?
Huh?
They
I don't know, but they were no longer white Negroes, as they were called in those
right.
days. And I'm wondering, what do you think is going to stop these kids when they get a little bit older
right.
from doing that same kind of shedding? Say, well, that was when I was a kid. I'm not listening to that anymore.
Well, I think that that's interesting. I interview a lot of people in the book from across the country, people in Oklahoma, people in Montana, people in Utah and Eugene, Oregon, and places like that, Gainesville, Florida. And one of the consistent things that most of the people I interviewed said was what you're saying. These were young white kids who grew up with another white kid who was maybe their best friend, maybe had introduced them to hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
And they had gone off and they would be saying, well, one guy said to me, I just don't know what happened to him.
we're talking to Bakari Kidwana, the author of the newly released Why White Kids Love Hip Hop, Wanksters, Wiggers, Wannabes, and the New Reality of Race in America. Now, there does seem to be some white rap artists, hip hop artists, that have some integrity, that have some authenticity, that have the respect
right.
of other artists. And how does that play into, it seems like it would play in pretty well into what you're saying, that this is a progressive thing
right.
in terms of racial relations.
Right. I think that there's a lot happening beneath the radar. I think that often when we talk about hip-hop, we talk about what's happening in the mainstream. Most certainly older people are looking at what Viacom has to tell us about hip-hop and what certain radio programs have to tell us about hip-hop. And that's not always what's the cutting edge. And what I see when you start to look at, you know, some of the underground rap music scene, you have artists, many of whom are white, who are selling around 100,000 units. They're independent labels.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing 200 concerts a year in cities and small communities around the country. I mean, that's significant. Audience from anywhere from 200 to 1,500. And there's a huge following for many of these artists and many black politically conscious artists, people who I call the lyrical descendants of Public Enemy and KRS-One, their audience in many cases is the same audience, and it's something like 95% white.
Mm-hmm. But, Bakari, that's not, as you very correctly point out, that's not what's being projected as the essence of hip-hop. The essence of hip-hop ends up being the party time, you know, let me wear a lot of jewelry, let me talk bad about this one or that one, let me settle a beef, that sort of thing.
Right.
How do you get past that so that people who really, see, because I think that, you know, for a lot of Americans, that's what they hear and that's what they react to.
Right.
How do you get them to see what's beneath the surface?
It's very difficult. I think that there are a number of scholars that are really starting to delve into the study of hip-hop. I think people should read these books, professors out of Duke University, professors out of Northeastern, professors out of Harvard and Stanford, with books out and coming out on hip-hop. And so I think that is one way. But I think that you have to, most certainly people who have children who are into hip-hop, if you're thinking what your kid is into is what's on TV alone, then I think you really have missed it. Within hip-hop, there is an intense debate within the hip-hop community of, you know, I was reading an article by Stanley Crouch in the Daily News a couple of days ago.
You were?
Yeah.
Why?
I think it's interesting, but I think that what people like that miss, what's missing a story like that is that there are young people themselves who are taking the same position, and they take the position that what is being shown on television is not real hip-hop. It is a distortion of what hip-hop is. And so there's an intense battle within hip-hop amongst young people, within the hip-hop underground, and people who are really angry with the corporate distortions of hip-hop. So that is an internal conversation. And so I think that those people who are taking that position as though young people are just consuming this stuff without any analysis, yeah, they're missing the point.
Well, so it seems to me that the picture you're painting for me is that you have a artistic community, you have a business community, you have a stylistic and cultural community that all revolves around the music. And just like any community, there's going to be people like say that guy's a sellout, that person's
absolutely
a troublemaker, and that doesn't have, you know, the implications that has in terms of being stereotyped by, you know, by white people or by older people or by whatever, you know, a lot of that has no bearing on what the reality is of hip-hop.
I don't think so. I think that the great fear ultimately is you have artists who are in the mainstream who are doing all these so-called bad things that supposedly only takes place in rap. It doesn't take place in the White House or anywhere else. But the fear, I think, is you have artists selling incredible amounts of units, and there's a huge conversation about hip-hop moving into a political movement.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if that same 1.4 million young people who made 50 Cent, you know, who bought 50 Cent's album in 4 days of its release, what happens if they start to turn out at the polls? I think that becomes a different question, and a lot of people don't really want to deal with that.
Hmm.
Important.
Well, apparently,
and it's a cross-racial audience. And I think that what's happened in American in politics is divide and conquer. And for a long time, you've been able to keep these groups of young people apart. In hip-hop, they're coming together. So what happens when you have 2 million people, you know, making a CD go platinum in a month on a regular basis? That, if it can be organized into a voting bloc, could represent serious change in the country. And I think a lot of people don't really want to see that because they're used to having the piggy bank to do with our tax dollars what they want.
They're scared of that. I mean, if Ohio is any indication in terms of African-American voters, I mean, it probably petrifies some of the powers that be in this country.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is definitely great possibility for a hip-hop political movement. And I think some of the activity that Russell Simmons was involved in, some of the activity of organizations like the League of Pissed Off Voters, the National Hip Hop Political Convention that I was involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I see young people across race who are concerned about similar issues. They're concerned about education. They're concerned about jobs that pay a living wage. And we can't even get a real conversation around minimum wage in this country. And so I think if those young people are able to organize for their interests, I think we're going to see a different country that lives up more to what we're supposed to be about instead of fighting wars that nobody wants.
That's a great vision. Bakari Kitwana is the author of the newly released White Kids Love Hip-Hop. Why White Kids Love Hip-Hop, Lengths as Wig as Wannabes, and the New Reality of Race in America. Bakari, thank you for being with us. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Bakari.
Thank you.
We're going to get into Camp Air America after this. Also, the War on Brains is coming up next, so stay with us. It's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America, 46 past the hour.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
73019-800-297-3019. That's 800-297-3019.
One past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep, yep.
The program is Morning Sedition. It's Air America Radio. We're raising money, folks. We're raising money to help send kids from the Bronx to summer camp. Go to the Air America, go to the Camp Air America link at morningsedition.com to find out how you can help. We're going to talk about that a little bit right now. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. $75. For 30 kids, $350 sponsors an entire week at camp for one child. We've already got some emails coming in telling us that people are donating. It's just tremendous the effort that people are making and just how little money it really takes to change a kid's life in some respect.
Absolutely.
I mean, camp changed my life.
And thank you very much. Those of you who contributed so far, thank you.
We'll read a couple emails in a second. The Bronx is host to, if you don't know about the Bronx, if you're...
I know about it.
Of course you do. I was talking to... whenever I look out that way, Riley, I see... I'm looking all the way to the coast of Los Angeles right now, and I'm saying, if you don't know about the Bronx, and someone in Wisconsin is going, hey, I don't know about the Bronx. It's host to 35 waste transfer plants and some of the highest asthma rates in the country. As you'd expect, it is the lower-income families who suffer the most. Joining us right now to discuss some of the lowlights, I would say, of summer in the Bronx is Melissa Fernandez. Melissa is the Assistant Site Director for the Beacon Program with Gloria Weiss Pathways for Youth Boys and Girls Club in the Bronx. Yeah, good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Good morning.
So let's talk about how awful the Bronx is in the summer. You want to?
Well, I mean, besides, you know, the beautiful people and the beautiful kids,
mm-hmm.
the music and the culture, we have to deal with a lot here in the Bronx, especially the community that my site is in, where I also am a resident, is mm-hmm. the West Point community in Soundview.
Yes.
Where we have to deal with so many issues that contribute to the quality of air, life.
Yeah.
For our residents, you know, we're dealing with the fertilizer company that recycles all the city's waste, which is called sludge, and they burn it at night. They make fertilizer pellets. And on a summer night, when you want to open up your window and maybe get a breeze after a long, hot day, you can't. You have to close your window.
Because it stinks so bad and the air is so bad?
It's horrendous.
Oh, my God. So today it's in the 90s.
As bad as that. And on a 90-degree day like this, you know, you have no choice but to close your windows. We also are the home of the Hunts Point, the market. So we have about 20,000 trucks coming in and out of this peninsula, you know, on a weekly basis.
Well, the exhaust.
So we have the exhaust fumes, the diesel exhaust fumes, and we also have a disproportionate number of waste transfer stations where the garbage comes in off the waterfront and then gets transferred out on the railway system. And so that happens at night. Railway systems are crowded, and so... They promised that it was going to happen very quickly, but sometimes the garbage stays there for long periods of time, and that smells.
And it must be noisy to boot, right?
It can be noisy. I mean, we're a community of 10,000 people, and there's more kids in this neighborhood than anything else. And the opportunity to go away to camp, you know, we're also an area that has no green there's no green field. There's one green field in Hunts Point. So the opportunity to go to sleepaway camp can transform their summer experience, can transform their lives. A lot of the kids who go to sleepaway camp, they go every year until they're too old to go, and then they want to work for the camp. And then they end up, you know, being youth development specialists.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's an experience that stays with the child for a very long time and gives them something to talk about, write about, dream about, be creative, you know. And so camp is really important, especially for our kids.
Now, what are the demographics, Melissa, in Hunts Point?
in Hunts Point, we have about 9,000 to 10,000 people, you know, residents who live here. There are 20,000 people who come in and out to work, and you know, mostly in the markets. It's a community that has its challenges. You know, there's crime, there's gang activity, there's prostitution. So the community organizations that are here, you know, Pathways for Youth, The Point,
yeah,
Sustainable South Bronx, there are a lot of issues that we have to deal with on a daily basis in order to just provide services for our children,
well,
for our families.
Right. Well, Melissa, we're going to try and you know, get some people to send some money and to send some of those kids to camp. Melissa Fernandez, thanks for joining us. It was it was a hard conversation, but I'm glad we know the truth about what's going on up there.
Well, thank you for putting these issues out there. I mean,
you bet.
You know, it's important for the kids. It really is.
Thanks for talking
Thanks,
to
Melissa.
Us. 30,
it can change their lives.
We're going to do it. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. $350 sponsors 1 week at camp for a child. Go to morningsedition.com. Go to the Camp Air America link. We've already got a couple of emails from listeners to Mark and the entire Morning Sedition team. I just contributed $35 to Camp Air America fund for all the reasons that you outlined in your announcement. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to support such a worthwhile cause. Best, Melanie. Dear Mark and Mark, yeah, and the whole gang, I will call and donate $50 to the camp now, more next paycheck. As a working class kid, I was never sent to camp and never learned to swim. My parents had the firm belief that if the public schools didn't teach it, it wasn't necessary. But we had fun anyways. Guess I should stay away from Coney Island, he says. Love the show and listen every day. So there you go, morningsedition.com, the Camp Air America link. Make a donation. We'll be back. Well, we're not really going anywhere, but coming up next, we've got the War on Brains. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. This is Air America Radio. It's 57 past the hour. Six past the hour, it's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes.
Hey, folks, Congressman John Conyers will be holding hearings tomorrow at 1 p.m. on the Downing Street memo. The hearings will be at the Democratic Party headquarters because Republicans, like Congressman James Sensenbrenner, would not let them be in the building anymore. The bastards. At 5 o'clock p.m. tomorrow, there'll be a large rally in Lafayette Square Park in front of the White House if you want to get involved with that. Also, I would like to tell you that C-SPAN has been covering these forums being held by John Conyers, and there was some question as to whether or not they will continue. If you want to put your 2 cents into that, 202-737-3220. 202-737-3220 is the number for C-SPAN, or you can email C-SPAN at events@c-span.org and tell them you'd like them to continue to cover these Conyers hearings because these are important. These are about the Downing Street memo. These are about to bring up social awareness and possibly impeachment case against the neocon death cult for coercing on paper. It's proof on paper from Tony Blair's government that they were trying to maneuver the British government to wrapping intelligence around policy in order to help in the illegal invasion of Iraq. A day after they began jury selection in the 1964 civil rights case of the killing of Schwerner, Goodman, and Cheney in Philadelphia, Mississippi, Mississippi Senator Thad Cochran did not co-sponsor a resolution apologizing for past failures to pass anti-lynching laws. So on some level, he refuses to oppose lynching, along with about 15 other Republican senators. Unbelievable.
And one Democrat, as a matter of fact.
Senator Bill Frist refused repeated requests for a roll call, one for a formal procedure that would have required all 100 senators to vote, and one requesting that the debate take place during business hours during the week instead of Monday night when most senators were in transit. A roll call vote would have put senators on the record on a resolution apologizing for past failures to pass anti-lynching laws.
You know, I wonder whether these people really have any reason to be that afraid of their constituents. Are there that many people who are pro-lynching in this country that senators of the United States have to be afraid that they're going to vote them out of office for supporting an anti-lynching apology, for God's sake.
Mind-blowing.
It is.
Florida Senators, Democratic Senator Bill Nelson and Republican Mel Martinez and a seemingly bipartisan coalition have threatened to filibuster and delay the federal energy bill until a ban put in place by Clinton on drilling in federal waters off Florida and other states is extended. See, this gap was made by them allowing drilling in the Anwar, you know, allowing drilling up there in Alaska. So now Republican legislators, some of them, and oil industry folks are sort of like, yeah, the gap is open. Let's drill on all the federal lands. Let's drill on the national parks. And Mel Martinez, to his credit, is standing up against this.
4.5 million acres underwater they want to do off the coast of Florida. And, of course, Mel Martinez and Bill Nelson and even Jeb Bush understands what this will do to tourism. People are not going to go places where they see huge oil derricks digging into the ground all day.
The New Jersey rules against same-sex marriages. The state appeals court in a 2-1 decision ruled Tuesday that New Jersey's constitution does not need to recognize gay marriages. Because they've got the civil unions already in place. There are some rights that gay couples have, but really not enough. What's so bad about making it a constitutional thing?
The decision sucks. This is pure and simple. They need to now, because they've made the decision, either appeal it or at the same time start pressuring the state legislature to pass it so that people can in fact get married no matter what their sexuality in the state.
Exactly.
Is.
Interesting language from the appellate judge with the one dissenting voice. It said, if marriage is defined as strictly a heterosexual union, couples are denied the right to marry the person of their choice and so have no real right to marry. That's an incredible little sort of sentence, an equation.
Yeah.
A semantic equation that makes it a civil rights issue, which is what it should be. You know, every week, Riley, we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the 4-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, the South, Dixie, a distinct area with its own unique heritage of cuisine and idiocy.
Hey.
A collective term describing the group of states Abraham Lincoln fought hard to keep in the Union before tragically dying too soon to see the results of his awful mistake. The ever-grasping tentacles of the Squid Administration stretched to an unprecedented low point last weekend when 3 more institutions of higher learning tragically fell victim to its hideous brain-sucking limbs. This fleshy monoculus, having satiated its antediluvian appetite on such delectable entrees as elementary schools, libraries, and scientific research, is now draining the intelligence and self-respect out of more young people than Michael Jackson and Scientology combined. Shameful. Ignominious. Enter the American Association of University Professors, or AYUP, who voted to censure 3 colleges in Tennessee, Kentucky, and Virginia for violating the Statement of Principles on Academic Freedom and Tenure, or SPAFT.
Yep.
Now you may ask, Mark.
Yep.
Why should we care what a yip thinks about SPAFT? It's very simple. You hebetudinous jackanapes. As a yip in your local ptah know, strict adherence to SPAFT means greater success with your GMATs, LSATs, MCATs, and DATs. And that's important.
It is, yeah.
A yip's ability to act ASAP on this means 47 colleges are now on the censure list of institutions tenaciously organized regionally against standards, or clitoris.
Whoa. Now, wait a second. Hold on, Mort. That isn't real.
Exactly, Mark. I'm glad you're paying attention.
Yep.
You and I know the clitoris isn't real.
Wait, no.
And most of our listeners know the clitoris isn't real. But as long as this country supports a regime that compromises education and the principles of academic freedom, the clitoris will remain as real to me as this microphone in front of my face.
Jim, are you all right? This is starting to sound an awful lot like that bit Tom does.
Don't break the fourth wall, idiot.
Yep.
The important thing to remember is someday the leaders of this nation will... And those on that list of 47 disgraced colleges will rediscover the sacred statement of principles on academic freedom and tenure. And when that day comes, SPAFT will hit the clitoris so fast it won't know what hit him.
Oh, yep.
And that's today's dispatch from the War on Race. This diatribe containing suggestive acronyms was brought to you by the Amalgamated Bank, a proud supporter of SPAFT.
Amalgamated Bank.
Man, are you all right?
Are you okay, Jim?
Yeah. 3 hours of sleep.
3 hours of sleep? What was going on, man?
It's hot. I can't get to sleep with the air conditioning and the heat.
You don't have an air conditioner?
Yeah, well, I do.
And you still can't get to sleep?
No, it's hard.
Yeah? Is that the only shirt you have?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously it's not the only one he hired.
I'm doing this work per diem.
Okay. Oh, that's right. How much you need?
Yeah, you give spot me a Hamilton?
Yeah, sure, no problem. Only if you give me an AutoZone.
George Hamilton.
Get into the zone! AutoZone!
We got Nora Ephron coming up, so stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. It's 14 past the hour.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
Experts now. 800-396-9711. 800-396-9711. That's 800-396-9711.
Eighteen past the hour, Mark Maron. Here's Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Got Nora Ephron coming up in just a few minutes. But first, let's take this call. It looks like it's Ted from Nebraska. How are you, Ted?
Good morning, Mark and Mark. I can't believe you liberals are apologizing for Howard Dean. He is offensive.
Oh, no, it's happening. Oh, no, I hate when... help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
And now, live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservative's way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocon. It's 19 past the hour here on Radio Halliburton, where the truth hurts. Hey, you know who that scream is, don't you? Howard Dean. Yeah, easy, big guy. Don't want to blow out an O-ring. Whoa, well, Dr. Pinko was shooting off his big mouth the other day. And he said that the Republican Party was a white Christian party.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
That's right. We are a white Christian party, patriots, and damn proud of it. Woohoo! Big surprise, surprise. The Democrats are mad at Dean.
Oh, I'm Nancy Pelosi. You can't say white and Christian in a sentence because everything has to be nice and multicultural and gay-friendly. Oh, my penis fell off.
That's right. Get into it. Nothing Mark the Shark likes better than a Democratic catfight. Oh, wait. Hold on. Let me get comfortable. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Come on, Howard. Grab her. Grab those panties. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Oh, thank you, Dean and Pelosi. I'll be watching that tape again. Hey, you know what? It's 20 past the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Tommy Pinko, liberals, New Yorker reader, tofu eating.
That's right. That's right. Good point, caller. The Supreme Court was right to go after those medical marijuana potheads. Hey, Cheech, sorry about your dope, man. Bummer, dude. Hey, hippie burnout. I got a hit for you right here. Here, have another toke, wavy gravy. Now you do have a medical condition, Panama Red. You've been sharked. Hey, it's 21 after the hour. Time for the Neocon Farm Report. Thanks to the Supreme Court, doesn't look like there's going to be much of a marijuana harvest this season.
Game over, man.
Yeah,
game over.
Suck it up, cancer patients. Looks like you're going to have to die without a buzz on.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Stick around, Neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Oh, man.
Are you okay, Maron?
I don't know. Did it happen again?
Are you over in the corner?
Oh, I feel weird. I got to go to the bathroom.
I think you're okay now, though.
That was nasty, man.
Wow.
I blacked out, and then I had a weird dream for a second. Now I'm back here. Well, folks, we're raising money to help send kids from the Bronx to summer camp. Go to Camp Air America. That's a link, the Camp Air America link at morningsedition.com to find out how you can help. $35 sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids, folks. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. $350 sponsors an entire week at camp for a kid, and this will change a child's life. I mean, it changed mine. I don't know for the better or for the worse, but I had a good time. I'll tell you that.
You enjoyed yourself at camp, did you?
Yeah, there's a couple different camps. There's a lot of things that can happen at camp. Not only do you learn the things that the camp wants you to learn, but you also
learn a few other things.
You know
well.
What I'm saying. So look at this, Riley. Tell me about this. The Yankees are building their own stadium. I guess they got jealous. Or has this been on the burner for a while that they just announced they're going to put $800 million into a new ballpark just north of the old one?
You know, it's amazing because I think in most cities in America, Mark, the owners of sports teams don't always like to see their name in print.
Mm-hmm.
Not so the New York Yankees and their owner, George Steinbrenner. George Steinbrenner hates it when any other sports team in New York gets pages in the newspaper. When they get the back page of the newspaper, George sees red. Never mind how his team is doing. He wants to make sure that the Yankees are in the mix. So what happens? You have the West Side Stadium, the stadium that was going to be for the Jets. Then comes the Mets talking about a stadium out in Queens that might try to lure the Olympics. Not to be outdone, here comes George with a Yankee proposal that really is now several years old.
I'm waiting for the Dan Pashman proposal to build a stadium for the Air America Jim Earls. I guess they got to win more than one game.
Well, wait a minute. Now,
two by a forfeit, right?
Oh, yeah, two games. One by forfeit. One if I land, two if I see.
P.W. McDonald's like, whoa, it was two. It's two. That counts, man. Kalo, you were there for the forfeit, no?
Yeah, only losers count the forfeit.
Oh!
Not counting that forfeit as a win.
Some in-house argument here.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's getting a little...
So when are they going to build a stadium for the Jim Earls? Is that downtown Brooklyn or what?
I think they're going to build it out in the street in front of Pashman's place in Brooklyn, yeah. So dig this, man. This is one of those stories, like, you know, this is why I don't buy an iPod. This is why I don't buy DVDs. I'll just borrow Chris's. I don't even like to buy CDs that much because I said last week before, it's like, because of planned obsolescence, because of that, the companies want you to buy stuff over and over and over again if they can get you to do it. Look at this. Sanyo has joined forces with Sony to develop the new global standard for the next generation of DVDs. How do you like that, Chris? How are you going to feel about buying all your DVDs over again in the new Blu-ray disc format of recordable DVDs.
That's not going to happen, unfortunately.
Exactly. All right, but dig this, though. Sanyo is also going to keep ties with Toshiba because they're developing high-definition TV DVDs. Now there's two different kinds.
High-definition TV DVDs?
Exactly. I don't even have the old DVDs. And the reason, here's the weird thing. The reason Sanyo is keeping relationships with both these companies, this is amazing, because they're hedging their bets because they're going to make the player that plays both formats and records both formats. So what I'm saying is, to the customer that you might need to buy DVDs you already own at least one more time or on one of these different formats, or at the very least, you're going to have to buy a player that will play the DVD on any of them, that will play all of them. You know what I'm saying. You're going to have to buy more stuff.
And these businesses try to put it off like, oh, well, this is just a natural progression. You know, it's kind of like from tape, you go into CD. No, it's not. It's the same thing. I'm not going to buy another DVD player because this has got to be high definition, but
in this DVD, the guy actually will touch you. He'll come out of the screen and touch you.
It depends on who it is.
But that's how they always sell it. It's like now some people believe, I don't know about you, Riley, but I mean, do you still listen to a record occasionally?
No, because I broke my turntable, so I don't have a chance to listen to it. I still have vinyl, but I don't listen to it.
I got some vinyl back in California. I had a turntable for a while, and I was doing it. But you know what's weird? It's like it does sound warmer and softer, and it is the way that many of these albums were meant to be heard.
Yeah.
So there's an integrity to it like that. But I tell you, you get spoiled with technology because you're sort of like, oh, wait, I got to put the needle on the thing?
That's where the problem is. That was why they started developing a lot of these consumer-friendlier things where you could just pick the track that you want instead of having to find it on a record.
Yeah, and now I've bought so many records again, and I barely listen to them. I swear to God, this is all, I'm done with it. I'm done with it. I'm just going to borrow your CDs. I'm going to borrow Chris's DVDs, and I'm going to borrow some of Pashman's comedy DVDs. P.W. McDonald, he only, we were talking about DVDs yesterday. What do you need to buy movies for? Because people like to have things. It's like they like to have it on the shelf. How many times are you going to watch a movie?
Yeah, but Brendan's got an encyclopedic knowledge of film, I would have think he's got a whole room full of stuff.
But he said no, he didn't like to buy movies because you don't really watch them. He buys TV shows.
Ah.
Because, you know, that's where you really catch up on stuff. If you got six episodes of
The Wonder Years?
Larry Sanders Show or The Family Guy, those guys who like...
Of all TV shows.
Yeah, and so...
Comes out of
my I know. Speaking of TV shows, we're going to talk to Nora Ephron, who just made a movie based on the old TV show Bewitched, and also we're going to talk about some politics in relation to the Deep Throat story, all that, and more on Air America as we continue.
Yeah.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Show how righteous we are. We have to show those liberal hippies.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. So it was a 1960s hit TV show, and our next guest turned it into a 21st century film. We're going to be talking here in just a second to Nora Ephron. If you don't know Nora Ephron, you do. She directed the film Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail. She received Oscar nominations for screenwriting for When Harry Met Sally and Silkwood. The new film Bewitched, which opens, I believe, on Friday, starts
next Friday.
Nicole Kidman, Will Ferrell, Michael Caine, Shirley MacLaine, and Stephen Colbert. Welcome to the show, Nora Ephron. How are you?
Welcome. Great.
Nice to see you. Thanks for coming down. So how does the film Bewitched, I mean, of course we all know the TV show. I mean, I had a crush on Elizabeth Montgomery, you know, I still do, I think. How does it differ from the TV show?
Oh, it's completely different.
Completely different?
Yeah, well, it isn't completely
different.
She's
a witch, right?
She is a witch. Nicole Kidman plays a witch who wants to be normal.
Of course.
And so she moves to the San Fernando Valley because it's the most normal place she can think of.
I can't tell you how many witches I've dated that wanted to be normal.
I think that metaphorically this is a rich movie, actually. And she, because she has Elizabeth Montgomery's nose.
The twinkle, or the crinkle?
The nose that she can twitch, but also that little perfect pert button nose. She is cast in a remake of Bewitched that a washed-up actor, played by Will Ferrell, has been conned by his manager into doing, on the grounds that this time it will be Darren's show.
So it's a TV show within a movie. The making of a TV within a movie of an old TV show.
Yes.
Okay.
It's actually very simple because it really is still about, can a witch and a mortal find happiness together?
Mm-hmm.
One of my friends says that it's a timeless theme because every woman wants to know that a man will love her even when he finds out she's a witch.
Or magic. You know?
Is the Agnes Moorehead character, who played Samantha's mother in the original series, is that role reprised in this?
Shirley MacLaine plays that role.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Agnes Moorehead was so evil in that. I just really enjoyed her work in that.
I know. Well, there were great actors on that show, and one of the things we wanted to do was to make the show a character in the movie rather than just to replicate it, because that show, weirdly enough, has quite a lot of iconic power for people. You had a crush on Elizabeth Montgomery, I believe you said.
Yes, and I think Riley just said he had a crush.
Yeah, everyone did.
Did you just say you had a crush on Agnes Moorehead or no?
No, I don't think he said that.
Agnes Moorehead.
I had
a crush on Agnes Moorehead in the 40s.
Oh, okay.
From
all right.
Some of those 40s movies.
I had a crush on an actress in it, an actress named Marion Lauren, who played Aunt Clara.
Mm-hmm.
This totally dizzy aunt.
Oh, she was great.
She was completely great. She kept bumping into walls and all the spells went wrong.
Yeah.
And when I wrote this script with my sister, Delia Ephron, we just were dying for Aunt Clara to drop into it. So she did.
And who plays Aunt Clara?
An actress named, oh my God, her name is Carol Shelley.
Thank God
it came to me. This is the nightmare of live radio. Yes.
So you wrote
Carol
this...
Shelley, who's in Wicked, by the way.
Okay, so you wrote it with your sister. You wrote the screenplay for this film with your sister. I can't even imagine writing with a sibling and without fighting. Did you fight?
Not this time.
Okay.
No.
What was the last film you wrote together?
Well, we have occasionally had our little moments, and they are horrible.
Yeah,
they're actually just horrible.
I can't imagine it. So now, when Will Ferrell,
but I think you have that with almost anyone you work with,
or
I
you're mean, married to, or anything.
Well,
yeah.
You know, I would never write with my husband.
Yeah,
it would be bad.
Yeah,
bad.
Wait a minute, husband no, but sister yes.
Well. Yeah.
So Will Ferrell,
for the obvious reasons. Yeah.
Will Ferrell is the lead in this. Obviously, one of the funniest men in America at this point in time. Did you have the part of Darren? Were you thinking of him when you wrote it? Was he on board before you finished it? What? How would that work?
Well, actually, we started out thinking about Jim Carrey. Carrey.
No.
Well, we did. Yeah. Jim Carrey had wanted to play Darren.
I could see him physically as I
physically,
mean,
yes. Yeah. He had sort of grown up thinking he kind of looked like Dick York.
Yeah.
And we even had a meeting with him, Nicole Kidman and I did, where he talked at some length about how he wanted this really to be a two-hander.
Uh-huh. What does that mean?
I think he meant that he wanted Nicole's part to be as good as his.
Uh-huh.
Which I was interested in.
Okay.
Since it's a given on Bewitched that it's the other way around, isn't it? Anyway,
so he walked in assuming the entire movie would be about him.
Whatever. And he also actually went into a whole thing about how he loved Uncle Arthur. Remember Uncle Arthur on the original Bewitched, played by Paul Lynde?
Oh, yeah.
And he was extremely eloquent on it. So then when he read the script and turned out not to respond to it, we got lucky and went to Will Ferrell.
We're talking to Nora Ephron. Her film that she's written and directed is Bewitched. It opens next Friday with Will Ferrell and Nicole Kidman. Now, can we talk about some other stuff?
Sure.
Because you were married to Carl Bernstein.
Yeah, I knew you were going to do this to me. Go on.
Well, you must have known about who Deep Throat was. But did your husband say, like, you can't tell anybody?
No, he said, I won't tell you.
So he didn't tell you?
No, he never told me.
But we had a report, a guy, Tim Noah, who wrote a piece about your son supposedly knowing and revealing it at summer camp.
Yes, no. See, Carl would not tell me.
Okay.
But I figured it out.
All right.
And I figured it out because there were all these clues that were right there. They were very obvious clues in all the President's
Men. Like
call
Mark Felt Deep Throat.
No, like that Bob Woodward had called Mark Felt my friend.
Okay.
M.F.
Okay.
Mark Felt, my friend. So I look at this, I go, this is so obvious, I don't believe it. And this is very Woodward-esque.
Uh-huh.
This kind of semi, well, it's kind of like very, it's an obvious kind of clue.
He does that? He speaks in a mild code?
I thought this was the kind of thing that would be Bob's idea of something kind of like a code that wasn't such a code.
You can decode the President's Men.
So yeah. I said to Carl when we were together, I know who it is.
Yeah.
And then I figured it out from another clue. There was another clue in a book that had been written before All the President's Men.
Yes.
Where Bob Woodward told a writer named Timothy Kress that it was a Justice Department source. Mm-hmm. So it was very obvious. If you read All the President's Men and you saw when the leaks began from Deep Throat, that it was someone who had access to FBI files, and that could only have been someone in the FBI a day or two after the break-in.
Okay, this is amazing to me that you had to do investigative work
no,
on your
it wasn't
husband's investigative work.
It was just so, well, you know, that's not so unlike other marriages in certain ways.
But usually for other reasons.
Yes.
But wait a minute, I got to ask you this because...
So I just want to say, so I said, it's Mark Felt and my then boyfriend / husband, whatever he was, said
the guy who was
said,
there.
I'm not telling you. So,
and that was the end of your marriage.
Well, that wasn't, but then it did end shortly thereafter because it turned out I was investigating the wrong thing. And then we got divorced, and then my children got older, and they said to their father, who's Deep Throat, and he said, I won't tell you. So they came to me, and they said, Dad won't tell us who Deep Throat is. And I said, well, I'm happy to, because by then I had told conservatively 10,000 people. I
10,000
mean, if you had been,
did you put in a movie
if you
on
had
a
had
sign?
A radio show and had asked me 15 years ago who Deep Throat was, I would happily have told you.
Really?
Yeah, but you wouldn't have believed me because no one did. No one believed me.
And you told that many people, and your son went to summer camp with the knowledge?
And my son went to summer camp, and someone said to him, who's Deep Throat? And he said, Mark Phelps. And the kid he said it to assumed he'd heard it from his father.
Okay.
See, it was a kind of, we don't want to accuse an 8-year-old of sexism, but it was an 8-year-old thinking he must have heard it from his father instead of from his equally gifted mother. So anyway, the kid then grew up and wrote a thesis in college about how he had sussed out who Deep Throat was because he picked this information up from my son,
who
was at summer camp.
Who leaked it.
Was like, so then we had to give a lot of interviews explaining that it was not Carl who had said that, it was me, and everyone made fun of me all over again.
But wait a minute, did you believe through Bob Woodward's denials? Because Bob Woodward went on the record several times and said, no, it was not Mark Phelps.
I don't know. Did he say, no, it was not Mark Phelps?
Yeah, he did.
Or did he say, well, then, I don't pay attention to everything Bob does. But the point is, it was obviously Mark Phelps. And as time went on, and they kept saying, when he dies, we will reveal this, which I personally think if I had been Deep Throat, I would start to find kind of irritating. Do you know, sort of like the clock is ticking.
We're
just waiting here for you to die. And then we're going to tell everyone and make a lot of money, right? But anyway, the point is that Mark Phelps was still alive. And then it came out about 2 years ago that Bob Woodward had been to visit Mark Phelps.
Right.
Yeah.
And, and so that was like the clincher, totally, as far as I was concerned.
So I think you have your next movie half written here. Is that possible?
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, I'll tell you something. When this news came out, I got a whole bunch of phone calls, and I said to myself, I'm taking the high road.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into this. This is not about me in any way.
Is there a high road in Hollywood?
Well, is there a high road anywhere?
Okay.
But then, you know, finally I just thought, I'm just going to write about it. So I did.
Okay.
You know.
Can I ask one more very quick question about the movie this time?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. The movie is Bewitched, and it opens June 24th.
June 24th. Yes. Were you ever tempted during the conception of this movie to actually
work Deep Throat into it?
Right. No. To do the two down.
Larry Tate was Deep Throat.
But there are jokes about that.
Really?
There are jokes about that. That's one of the... Actually, I hope
there were two actors.
Extremely amusing jokes, yes, because they did replace Darren in the
midway,
course of making Bewitched without a word of explanation. He just turned up as an entirely other person, and so that is something that Will Ferrell has some fun with in the movie, among other things.
You don't want to give it away. You see that, right?
No, I don't, because I don't do the line as well as Will Ferrell.
Well, yeah, so we'll go see the movie. It's Bewitched. It opens next Friday. Our guest has been Nora Ephron, and she's been a very good sport, and I really appreciate you coming down here
and
talking to us.
My pleasure, Mark and Mark.
We'll be back with the Cliff Notes and wrap this up. So stay with us here on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. It's 46 past the hour.
From Monty Python, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. They're not the Messiah, they're very naughty boys on Air America Radio.
800-357-1473. 800-357-1473. That's 800-357-1473.
Hey, it's 51 past the hour of Glenn. This thing. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey!
Back from Disney World.
Yeah.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Nora Ephron was great.
That was fun.
It was great.
A lot of fun.
Classy. Charming woman.
You know what I liked about her?
Mm-hmm.
She checked us out before she got here.
Yeah, she listened to us a little bit. I'm a huge fan of the movie Silkwood.
Me too.
And I got to be honest with you, until a couple days ago, I didn't realize that she had written that. And it's a pretty brilliant
movie.
It's a
deep movie, yeah.
Hey, folks, let's get a couple of little bits of business done here. We'll be broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn next Friday, June 24th.
Yeah.
So come on down for that. I will be performing live at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday, June 25th, the day after we are in Brooklyn. You can go to bananascomedyclub.com for ticket info. We are raising money to help send kids from the Bronx to summer camp. Go to the Camp Air America link at morningsedition.com to find out how you can help. We're going to be talking about this for obviously a little bit of time. We're going to be talking to people about the Bronx, about camp. If $35, folks, sponsors a morning hike for 15 kids. $75 sponsors an afternoon of camp activities for 30 kids. And $350 sponsors an entire week of camp for a child. And that's, you know, you can go to morningsedition.com. It's the Camp Air America link. And get involved with that. Give these kids a little money so we can send them to camp for a little while.
It makes a difference.
Congressman John Conyers will hold hearings tomorrow at 1 p.m. on the Downing Street memo. The hearings will be at the Democratic Party headquarters because Congressman Sensenbrenner won't let him in the building anymore to have a meeting. All right, so they got Conyers holding these forums that should be hearings across the street or around the corner at the DNC, and now C-SPAN has been covering these forums. This is important information to get out there. This is a momentum towards, you know, at least on paper, an impeachment process. You know, Conyers is a champion of this kind of stuff. He was also the champion of investigating Ohio, the voting irregularities in Ohio, and the voting the obstacles that were put up by the Ohio Secretary of State there. So look, C-SPAN has been covering this, and they might need a little encouragement to continue covering it because there's been word that they might not cover these hearings or these forums that John Conyers is doing at the DNC. So you can call C-SPAN at 202-737-3220 or email events@c-span.org. That's the number for C-SPAN, 202-737-3220, to encourage them to continue to encourage John Conyers and to get the message out to people that these actions are taking place despite the fact that the giant man-child, James Sensenbrenner, is pushing these guys out into another building. They have every right to be in the Capitol to hold these type of hearings, these forums, because this is important stuff. But, of course, because the GOP is in charge and working at behest of the neocon death cult, they've been pushed to another building.
Well, listen, you know, the Downing Street memo simply says the fix was in, the deal was done, before George W. Bush was prepared to tell the American people that he was going into Iraq, he was going to send our soldiers into Iraq, he had already made up his mind and already was demanding fixed intelligence to back up his claim and to back his play.
Yeah.
And, you know, John Conyers, you know, I wish he could do a hearing here in New York. We could do one of our broadcasts from somewhere. I wish we could have him on with us doing a hearing as a broadcast one day.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
That would be fun. Why not? He goes on the road with hearings before.
Looking forward to tomorrow. We're going to get into this thing. A little obsessed with the new case of mad cow disease here in this country. I believe that this is going to be the biggest story of the, you know, the last 25 years. We're going to see that. I believe that a lot of people who are assumed to have Alzheimer's have this thing, and there's a lot more to be worried about. And we're going to talk to a guy tomorrow, author John Stauber, about the cases that are here and about what the possibilities of it being more widespread than it's being let on, which I think are big. Comedian Dom Irrera is also going to be on the phone with us tomorrow. He's very funny, man. Actress Peggy Lipton is going to be with
Mod Squad.
From the Mod Squad. Can you believe it? Now, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes, if we could. Michael Jackson says he is ending sleepovers with children. Jackson said he plans to spend the next few days resting, getting his strength back, and deleting all his kiddie porn files. Michael Jackson's lawyer said Tuesday he's convinced that the pop star would no longer let children, quote-unquote, sleep in his room. His, quote-unquote, his room. Ah, you know, semantics. God's gift to pedophiles. A new poll shows more. You don't have to laugh at that, Riley.
Oh,
I know where you stand. I know what's going on here.
No. We're distracted, man. I'm sorry.
A new poll. You don't have to laugh. I know this Michael Jackson thing. We're going to have to talk about that.
It's a sensitive issue.
A new poll shows more people consider Bill O'Reilly a journalist than Bob Woodward. Although only 30% of the public said Woodward was a journalist, that number jumped to 60% when the question was rephrased to Bob Woodward is played by Robert Redford. Of course, Woodward became famous back when the word journalist was often associated with reporting and facts. Today's phrase, if you could, just drop it into conversation. Guantanamo is just the tip of the iceberg, sheeple. No one is talking about the secret government testing facility under Disney World in Orlando that uses prisoners for guinea pigs. Wake up, sheeple. It's the happiest place on earth unless Agent Mickey has you strapped to a table being pumped full of government-approved joy juice. How's Guantanamo sound now, folks? Those are your morning sedition clip notes for today. Riley, it's nice having you back.
Hey, man, I'm good. Glad to be back. And can I quote one quick thing before we go?
Got to be quick.
Cindy Sheehan said, beating a political stake in your black heart will be the fulfillment of my life. Talking about George W.
Yeah.
Bush, and God love her. Have a good one, man. It's
you
been
too,
fun.
Man. Has been.
Air America Radio.